So hey there, and how you doing? Welcome to episode 103 of the Movement and Mindfulness podcast. Today we are going to be talking about comparison. Comparison with others, comparison with ourselves, and how that might be getting in the way of actually responding to what is. So stay tuned for that. Hi, and welcome to the Movement and Mindfulness podcast with me, Erica Webb of Erica Webb Yoga and Pilates. In this podcast, I, along with my guests, will explore what it means to move as an act of self-kindness and self-discovery. We'll look at the ways movement, mindset, and mindfulness support us to be and do the things we so desire in the world. I truly believe that movement has the ability to expand our capacity to show up for the things that are important to us. And I'm here to help you embrace the idea of movement as a powerful tool for wellness, rather than just another thing you think you should be doing. I'm thrilled you're here. Let's do this. So hey there, and welcome to episode 103 of the Movement and Mindfulness podcast. We are here in Melbourne on day like four, I think, maybe five, I'm not even sure, of our fourth lockdown. And this is my second time recording this episode because the first time the audio cut out for some reason, and we're on day two of homeschooling and the mental load is high. So I'm just going to set that context out at the get-go, just in case any of my sentences don't quite come together with as much clarity as I would like. And today we're going to be talking about comparison and the comparisons that we make that potentially get in the way of us feeling the way that we want to feel and moving in the ways that are actually the most effective and responsive for us at any given time. And this topic and this podcast episode was inspired by a conversation that I had earlier today with my friend Jessica Patching Bunch, or JPB. And Jess has been a guest on the podcast before. She's an awesome person, a stress and resilience coach, and she's going to be back on the podcast soon, actually. And we were chatting today and we were just talking about how we both have this propensity to compare ourselves to other people. And I mean, reality is that's a very human trait that we, you know, look outside of ourselves, I suppose, for evidence of our worth. It's not necessarily a particularly great human trait, but it's something that we do. And I was telling just this story about how I want to run more. It's something that I've kind of always wanted to dabble in, but I've never really done a lot of it because I've always felt very subconscious, self-conscious even, about the fact that I can't run for very long before I need to take a break. And when I used to be at the gym, I would sometimes run on the treadmill, but I could really never crack more than like 3 minutes. I've always been pretty good at like bursts of energy, but really sustained long periods of time running and is not something that I've trained. It's not something that I have spent any time really trying to improve. And so anyway, point being that I would sometimes not even bother bumping up the speed on the treadmill to jog or to run because I was so conscious of looking silly to the people who'd been running for 30, 40, 50, 60 minutes, which is crazy because I'm sure that they had little interest in what I was doing. But I was comparing my skill, or what I, you know, perceived to be a lack of skill, to what I assumed was better. And as a result, not doing the thing that I wanted to do for fear of looking silly. And essentially because I'd shamed myself into thinking that I was doing it badly or doing it wrong. And I think that we do this as humans far more often than perhaps is very useful because so often if we are looking outside of ourselves for evidence of like what is best, we are absolutely failing to notice what is true for us at any given time. And that really is the most, maybe even the only information that we need to make decisions about what we're going to do next. Yes, we sometimes need guidance to figure out what that looks like and how that works, but we have got, as you know, humans living in our own bodies, access to so much incredible information about how we are, about how we feel, about how things feel as we do them. And yet we look outside of ourselves and, you know, in this example of me running on the treadmill, I suddenly am not good enough, and my need to stop and walk suddenly becomes this bad thing, rather than just how it is for me and me enjoying the process of exploring that movement. So perhaps it's the same for you. Perhaps there's a movement or a class or something that you've wanted to do and you haven't done it for fear of that comparison trap, knowing that other people are going to be better than you and thinking that that means something. So I want to talk briefly. We're not going to make this one too long, but I want to talk briefly about the sort of four kinds of ways that we tend to compare ourselves and how all of those sort of get in our way around movement that is responsive to how we are and what we need and how we actually want to feel. What I want to sort of preface this with is that it is absolutely true that as humans, we have an automatic negative bias, which basically means that because we are creatures that are wired for survival, we are absolutely on the lookout for things that threaten that survival. And comparison is one of those things. When we think someone is better than us, that is a threat to us on a kind of very base level. And so it's not unusual to play the comparison game because it kind of goes with our natural way of looking at the world, which, you know, may be natural, but not terribly helpful sometimes, because somebody being better at running on the treadmill is not an immediate threat to my well-being. And yet that's potentially how it's perceived on a sort of more subconscious level. So prefacing this to say that we all have this negative bias that explains why comparison can be so easy to fall into. And so it's not even so much about trying to eliminate comparison, because I think that that's actually a very hard thing to do and potentially impossible, because some of these things just happen very automatically. But having the wherewithal, I suppose, to notice that, hang on, this isn't actually supporting me towards what I want. This isn't supporting me to feel the way I want to feel or move towards what it is that I want to move towards. And so we can kind of like take that moment of like, do I want to follow this path? Do I want to take the kind of natural progression of this into, you know, potentially feeling guilt, shame, and potentially walking away from this thing that you think you want to do? So let's talk about this. And I'm going to relate it to mindful movement on a yoga mat, you know, so yoga, Pilates, the sort of stuff that I teach, because it's my wheelhouse. This is my area of expertise. So let's talk about it in that context, which, you know, also mindful movement can absolutely be running, can be anything. So the four ways that we might compare ourselves, I'm going to run through the list and then we'll sort of talk about them. So we might be comparing ourselves to others. We might be comparing ourselves to what we think is quote unquote better. We might be comparing ourselves to ourselves. So us now versus us back then. And we might be comparing ourselves to what we wish we could do. So against our goals, maybe conscious goals, maybe just things we're like, oh, I wish I could do that. So maybe the most obvious one is comparing ourselves to others, especially when we think about these movements that we might do in a class context, whether it's a, you know, in-person class or a Zoom class, where we potentially have this ability to see what other people are doing, even if it's just the teacher. And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of the way that we kind of learn to move and we learn new movements is by watching how those movements are executed. We listen to instructions, we try to kind of like approximate what we're seeing in a movement that we create in our own body. And there's lots of ways we can do that. And without a doubt, the like best way is to do it from a felt place, you know, noticing how it feels in your body. But the reality is often it comes from a very visual place of just like, how do I get my body to be in this shape? And so we might look around as we're going through that process and notice that other people are doing it like better than we are. And, you know, better is subjective. They might not be doing it better at all, but we see something that we perceive as better, whether it be something that requires more strength, more flexibility, more whatever to execute. And we make that mean something about our version, about what it is that we are doing and what it is that we are experiencing. And the real trap here is that somebody else's experience means literally nothing about yours. Literally nothing. And yet we might look at somebody who, I don't know, we think we're struggling in a downward dog, for instance, and we see somebody else doing one and they look poised and they look effortless and they look strong and they are hanging out there much longer than we think we can. And we make their experience mean something about our experience. And we don't even know their experience for a start. So we're making their outward appearance mean something about us. And truly, somebody else's ability, capacity, outward appearance about something makes no difference to your experience of it unless you make it mean something. Holding a downward dog for 2 seconds might be a massive, mammoth, awesome achievement for me. Whereas actually coming out of that downward dog and resting might be the thing that is the massive achievement for that person that's holding it looking really strong. Or maybe it's something else, right? So looking purely at the aesthetics of what somebody else can do truly does us a great disservice because it means nothing about our experience. It doesn't make our experience less valid. It doesn't mean that what we're doing is worse. It doesn't mean that what they're doing is better. It doesn't even suggest that what they're doing is meeting them where they are at. And I think that this always has to be the goal with mindful movement. Is the movement meeting me or am I meeting it? You know, like, am I finding a way of making this work for me today? And if you're exhausted, holding downward dog for, I don't know, 10 breaths might be an unkind thing to do, might be a kind thing to do. I don't know. But, you know, we can't make those assessments about somebody else. And so, again, we do ourselves a great disservice if we're comparing ourselves to somebody else's aesthetics because it moves our attention away from what actually matters, which is, you know, how does this feel for me? Because we're not there to compare ourselves to anyone else. It happens. But when we are moving in order to feel well, we can't do that if our eye is on somebody else's experience, which we can't even garner anyway. We don't know what somebody else's experience is. We can just see what it looks like. So that's how sort of comparing ourselves to others happens, and it absolutely gets in our way. I think that we see this often too, where, you know, it looks as though they have more of something, more flexibility, more stamina, more strength, more something. And we make that mean that we are a deficit in some way. And so we get to choose, you know, do we follow that path? Do we follow that thought of they are better than me and so therefore I am bad? Or do we notice and bring ourselves back to what am I feeling? Am I meeting myself where I'm at? Because that's actually all that matters. And recognizing that somebody else's pose or movement literally makes no difference to ours. It does not make ours better, worse, lesser, better, right? The second way that we can compare ourselves is to what we think is better. So we have this kind of idea in our mind that whatever it is that we're doing, it's not as good as what it could be. And again, this can really derail us because there are always lots of different ways to do something. There's always lots of sort of nuance in this. You know, we can add on, subtract from any given movement to make it work for us on any given day. And so sometimes the thing that requires less effort, less strength, less stamina is exactly what we need. And other times the thing that requires us to sort of dig for a little bit more strength or stamina or whatever it is what we need. And so there is no black and white, this is better, this is worse. It's all relative to how we are at any given time. And so comparing ourselves to some kind of like loose idea of what is better or some clear idea even of what is better is a disservice because better how, you know? It doesn't take into account all of the other factors that are far more important than what a thing looks like. Then we have this capacity of, you know, comparing ourselves to past version of us that used to be able to do something and can no longer do it. And I hear this one all the time. As we get older and we maybe stop doing things like getting up and down off the floor with frequency, crossing our legs, you know, that crisscross applesauce that kids are taught in primary school, cartwheeling, handstanding, things that we do as kids and then we sometimes stop doing. And we look back and we think, oh, I used to be able to do that and now I can't. And we see that as a failing of our body, or we sort of see it as a failing of us. One way that this has happened for me is that I used to be able to do some chin-ups, and I had worked pretty hard and consistently towards that goal of being able to do chin-ups, and I can't do them anymore. And sometimes we have a chin-up bar in the house, so I hang on it quite often, and I'll kind of just do a little bit of exploration there, and I absolutely can't do any chin-ups at the moment. And, or not from completely straight arms, I can sort of do a little bit of a bend, get myself a little head start. But absolutely the thought comes up of like, well, but I used to be able to do this. That's bad. And again, how does that serve us? How does that help us? How does that give us anything other than kind of just feeling crap about ourselves? It doesn't move us anywhere. It doesn't support us in how it is that we want to feel. And so just noticing that, like, okay, yeah, cool. Used to be able to do that. Do I want to be able to do it again? Maybe. If so, that's a different conversation, but just comparison for comparison's sake isn't particularly helpful. And then that's kind of leads really easily into this fourth one, which is comparing ourselves to what we wish we could do. And that might be a spoken or an unspoken goal. So in the instance of this, you know, pull-up, these chin-ups that I worked towards quite some time ago and now, you know, can't do again. Yeah, I actually would like to be able to do that again. The question though becomes, do I want to do it as a comparison trap, right? Because I used to be able to do it. Is it just this wish in my mind? Or do I want to do it because of something else that's actually a little bit more useful, like how I think it's going to make me feel? When I can do a pull-up, I feel strong. I feel capable. I feel powerful. They're not the only ways to feel those things. I can choose to feel those things in lots of other ways. But I hope that it's evident that moving towards those feelings is very different to falling into the comparison trap. It is just different in so many ways. And so, you know, one of the things that comes up for me as I'm talking about this is that, you know, maybe you're listening thinking, okay, well, that's great. The comparison though to what I think is better and what I wish I could do, they're goals. So how do I sit with what is while continuing to move towards that goal? And I think that that is actually really different to comparison. I think that comparison can lead us towards deciding, is that a goal? Is that something I want to move towards or not? But the feeling behind a goal or something that we're trying to move towards is very different to the negative heaviness of comparison. And that's just my thoughts. I'd love to hear what you think. Perhaps you have a different experience and I would love to hear all about it. But I certainly feel like when I sit in comparison, it's a heaviness, it's a guilt, it's a should, rather than something that's a possibility, something that I want to move towards. And so, you know, we can be present with what is true for us as we move towards a goal. But I think it's hard to be present to what is true for us when we're stuck in comparison, because it takes our eye away from being responsive to what is. And we can be responsive to what is whilst moving in the direction of what we want, absolutely. But we do it in a way that keeps us grounded in what it is we need at any given time. Because when we want to move in ways that support us to feel well, truly the best way to do that is to be in conversation with ourselves, in conversation with our body. Because if we do something simply because we think it's the right thing to do, so, you know, maybe we signed up for an aerobics class, and we're like, I'm going to do it no matter how I feel. And we do that class on a day where we feel awful. And we had a little inkling that maybe this isn't the right thing for today. Maybe I, you know, a gentle walk would be better, or rolling my yoga mat, but we do it anyway. Then we're not able to sit in what is true, because we have, you know, sort of stopped listening to the signals of what is true for us and what that means in terms of what we move towards. And our results tend to be not what we hoped for. So if we kind of went to this aerobics class hoping that we would feel full of energy at the end and inspired and feeling great, and yet actually our body was saying, not today, I need something gentle, I need this, then we actually end up not moving towards how we want to feel. We move away from it because we weren't listening. And this isn't always easy. Sometimes we don't get the signal right. Sometimes we choose against it. It's like when we're exhausted and we know probably what we need to do is go to sleep, and yet we choose not to because something else is more important at the time. And so it can be a bit of trial and error, and that's okay too. But hopefully that makes sense in terms of, you know, how we feel and what we notice about ourselves at any given time is far more important than the comparisons that we can make. And there's times where all four of these comparisons will happen. So, you know, if we think even just again about this chin-up version or example, you know, I can easily compare myself to others and feel bad. I can easily compare myself to what I think is better and make that make me feel bad. I can easily compare it to what I used to be able to do in the past. Again, makes me feel bad. And I can compare it to what I wish I could do and make it feel bad. Or I could not follow those thoughts down that kind of beaten path and choose instead to move in response to how I feel in the direction of what it is that I want. So I think that's all I have to say about that. Really just an invitation to notice where might comparisons be getting in the way of you noticing what is true for you, noticing what it is that you need. Don't let comparison kind of strip you of that opportunity to try things that excite you because you're fearful of how you might look relative to other people. Don't let it, you know, strip you of your ability to notice what is true for you and to move in the direction of what you want. I think we spend, you know, valuable time on this comparison stuff when if we flip it and invest that same time in responsiveness and self-kindness, we will, you know, change the game for ourselves in such a good way. So I'm going to leave it there. I wanted to keep this one short. And as I said, second recording, let's hope the audio works this time. If you're listening to this, it obviously has. So that is a win. Anyway, I hope that you are doing great. I would love to hear your thoughts about comparison. Come share them with me over on Instagram. You can DM me or send me an email. erica@ericawebyoga.com.au. And I will look forward to talking to you again next week. Take care. Thanks so much for joining me for this episode of the Movement and Mindfulness podcast. I hope you loved it. And if you did, maybe share it with a friend who would love it too. And I'd also be so grateful if you'd take the time to subscribe, rate, and review the show. It makes such a difference to get that feedback. And if you're over on social media, why not come and find me? You'll find me at Erica Web Yoga on both Instagram and Facebook. And over on my website, you'll find access to some free resources, including free classes that will help you to move well, feel well, and most importantly, move with kindness. Over there, you'll also find more information about joining me inside the Mindful Movement Virtual Studio, which is my home of kind movement, yoga, Pilates, and somatics to help you move well, feel well, and all with kindness. Until next time, I hope you're having a great day. I'll talk to you again soon.